Chaturdashi, Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 5, text number 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Tasya
eva
heto
prayateta
kovida no labhyate
yat
brahmatam upariyadha Tot labhyate dukhavat anyata sukham kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa tasyaiva heto prayateto kovido Na labhyate yad brahmatam upariyadah.
Ta labhyate
dukkhavat anyatha sukham. Kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. Tasyaiva heto prayateto kovido.
Tasyaiva heto prayateto kovido.
Na labhyate yad brahmatam upariyada.
Na labhyate yad brahmatam upariyada.
Ta labhyate dukkhavat anyatha sukham. Kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. Tasya,
for that purpose,
eva,
only,
heto,
reason,
prayateta,
should endeavor,
kovida,
one who is philosophically inclined,
not, labhyate,
is not obtained.
Yet,
what?
Brahmatam,
wandering.
Upariyadha,
from top to bottom.
Tut,
that.
Labhyate,
can be obtained.
Dukkhavat,
like the miseries.
Anyata,
as a result of previous work.
Sukham,
sense enjoyment.
Kalena,
in course of time.
Sarvatra,
everywhere.
Gabhira,
subtle.
Ranghasa,
progress.
Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace,
A.C.
Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada.
Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end, which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet, Brahmalok, down to the lowest planet, Patala. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as in course of time we obtain miseries, even though we do not desire them. Report: every man everywhere is trying to obtain the greatest amount of sense enjoyment by various endeavors. Some men are busy engaged in trade, industry, economic development, political supremacy, etc., and some of them are engaged in fruitive work to become happy in the next life by attaining higher planets. It is said that on the moon the inhabitants are fit for greater sense enjoyment by drinking soma ras, and the Pitriloka is obtained by good charitable work. So there are various programs for sense enjoyment, either during this life or in the life after death. Some are trying to reach the moon or other planets by some mechanical arrangement, for they are very anxious to get into such planets without doing good work, but it is not to happen. By the law of the Supreme, different places are meant for different grades of living beings according to the work they have performed. By good work only, as prescribed in the scriptures, can one obtain birth in a good family, opulence, good education, and good bodily features. We see also that even in this life, one obtains a good education or money by good work. Similarly, in our next birth, we get such desirable positions only by good work. Otherwise, it would not so happen that two persons born in the same place at the same time are seen differently placed according to previous work. But all such material positions are impermanent. The positions in the topmost Brahmaloka and the lowest Patala are also changeable according to our own work. The philosophically inclined person must not be tempted by such changeable positions. He should try to get into the permanent life of bliss and knowledge, where he will not be forced to come back again to the miserable material world, either in this or that planet. Miseries and mixed happiness are two features of material life, and they are obtained in Brahmaloka and in the other lokas also. They are obtained in the life of the demigods and also in the life of the dogs and hogs. The miseries and mixed happiness of all living beings are only of different degree and quality. But no one is free from the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. Similarly, everyone has his destined happiness also. No one can get more or less of these things simply by personal endeavors. Even if they are obtained, they can be lost again. One should not therefore waste time with these flimsy things. One should only endeavor to go back to Godhead. That should be the mission of everyone's life. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. It is interesting to note, Prabhupada is mentioned twice here, at least, miseries and mixed happiness. So the material position is miseries and mixed happiness. What is the feature of mixed happiness? It's another type of misery, actually. One may be enjoying material pleasure, but deep within, there's the gnawing anxiety of knowing that at any minute it can be taken away. So even in their moments of the greatest pleasure, the greatest happiness, there is always that fear, when will this be taken away? You see? So this is why, even though we say there is some happiness here, actually it is also described it as nothing but misery. Because that happiness is a miserable happiness. Mixed happiness means happiness mixed with misery, not pure happiness. So whether you have pure misery or misery mixed in with some happiness, it's still miserable. You cannot fully enjoy anything in this material world, never. All the way from Patala Loka to Brahma Loka, everywhere, simply misery is going on of different degrees. As that misery is coming, according to our previous work, you can't go back and change your previous work. You're going to get a certain amount of punishment from the laws of nature. Of course, when one becomes initiated, that does change then. One is initiated into the Brahma Sampradaya, then that karma then goes up and is purified by Krishna. However, there is still a token reaction which is meted out to us because we need it. Until we become completely pure, we need to have something make us sober. Therefore, a token reaction is given for previous activities. A mere pittance of what we actually deserve, but still we get something that is actually good for us. So, because of our previous actions, we're getting either reaction or token reactions. And even though we don't desire those miseries, they come to us. So, by the same way, happiness will also come. Material happiness will come by its own accord. One does not have to make some big endeavor for material happiness. You're going to get it anyway. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that someone from America, they can go to any part of the world and they maintain a high standard of living. It's their karma. Whether they're in India, wherever they may be. We see the American devotees in India, you know, they live in the MVT, you know, they have high standard. It's their karma. So whatever your karma is, that's going to go with you, wherever you are. Because that's your karma. It's part of your life. It's an intrinsic part of your life. Your karma is there. So, instead of making some big endeavor to change your karma, which you can't really do because it's from your previous actions, you can't go back and redo them. One should make the endeavor to get out of karma altogether. That's intelligent. It's interesting the way that Narada Muni describes it here. It's kind of a reverse way. Those who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor for that purposeful end, which is not obtainable by wandering from the highest planet to the lowest planet. Instead of saying they should endeavor for liberation from the cycle of birth and death, he says they should endeavor for that purposeful end, which is not obtainable by wandering around this material existence again and again and again and again and again. This kills the idea also that Krishna consciousness is for blind followers. You know, bhakti yoga is for people who are not, jnana yoga is for people who are intelligent and philosophically inclined, and bhakti is for foolish sentimentalists who don't have enough brain substance to you know, hear and digest philosophy. That's not at all true, proven by this statement here. And what's notable is the word actually, which implies that the jnanis are not actually intelligent and philosophically inclined. The jnanis are actually a shadow of the genuine, intelligent, philosophical mentality of the bhaktas. They're just a shadow of it, actually. Because they are very proud, they try to understand things independently, which is a foolish thing to do. It's very foolish. There's a common saying, don't reinvent the wheel. It's a waste of energy to try to reinvent the wheel. It's already there. Take advantage of it. And you'll be, you know, a million miles ahead of that person who refuses to accept the wheel and wants to reinvent it on his own. So the wheel is already given. The Vedic wisdom is already there. Why should we think, well, I don't want to take it from someone else. I want to invent it all on my own so I have the credit for being great. That's stupid. I refuse to wear a watch unless I can invent one of my own. Well, you're going to be late. Are you going to be early? You're not going to be on time. You're going to waste so much time because you're not on time. The watch is already there. Why not take advantage of it? Utilize it. This is intelligent. So the bhaktas, they take advantage of the deep, deep, deep philosophy presented so thoroughly in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedanta Sutra and the Bhagavad Gita. They take advantage of this. And that puts them a million miles ahead of the jnanis who are back there trying to figure it all out. Well, it's not this and it's not that. Could it be this? Could it be that? Well, I don't know. But in this way, they speculate. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mang prapajyate vasudeva sarvamati samahatma sadurlava. After many births and deaths, those who are actually intelligent, those who are actually wise, they surrender unto Krishna. So why should we waste our time going through bahunam janmanam ante, millions of lifetimes, when if we simply hear from the pure devotee, we simply hear from the spiritual master now, and then everything becomes solved immediately. This is intelligent, you see. This is actual and philosophical expertise. If a perfect philosophy is already there, let me simply try to understand it with my intelligence. And if one implies one's intelligence, try to understand, you will find it is indeed profound, as confirmed by Krishna Das Kaviraj. If you will lend your intelligence to understand these teachings of Chaitanya Chandra, then you will find them to be strikingly wonderful. So that indeed is the reality. We take the knowledge as it is coming down from the acharyas, mahajano yena gatasapanta. We save so much time and immediately we become enlightened with spiritual knowledge. We simply have to take this process very seriously. Then Krishna will reveal to us the truthfulness, the veracity of it. It will become very clear that we take very complete shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Then it will become crystal clear the reality of this wisdom. It will not be blind faith. It will actually be realized knowledge. We simply have to throw ourselves into the process of Krishna consciousness. Bowing down at the feet of Guru and Krishna, we must fully surrender ourselves to them, dedicate our every thought, word, and deed for their pleasure and satisfaction. And in this way, to the degree that we actually imbibe that consciousness, to that degree Krishna will become perceivable to us. Krishna is actually perceivable through all the senses, through the hearing, through the seeing, through the tasting, through the smelling, and through the sense of touch. One can contact, and also on the subtle plane as well, Krishna can be contacted through all the senses because he's everywhere. He's on the subtle plane, he's on the gross plane, he's in all, there's no place where Krishna does not exist. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me. His pearls are strung upon a thread. Krishna is everywhere. If you try to remove Krishna from everything, then everything falls apart. Krishna and everything. Everything depends on Krishna. Everyone and everything depends on Krishna for his or its existence. Or her existence. We all depend on Krishna. Therefore, we cannot be separated from Krishna, as we were discussing yesterday. Even though we are separated parts and parcels, we're only partially separated from him. We can never be fully separated from Krishna. We require that connection with Krishna for our very existence. We have in fact been wandering, like anything. Wayward souls, checking out this scene, checking out that scene. trying to enjoy as a demigod, trying to enjoy as a worm in the stool. The worm in the stool, he's thinking, home sweet home. If you pull the worm out of the stool, thinking, feeling sorry for the poor creature, he's living in such a rotten, nasty, abominable place. Let me be kind upon the creature and pull him out, put him somewhere else where it's cleaner and nicer. He will crawl back to the stool. He won't appreciate your charity. He won't be back in the stool, the dirt. So we've been wandering like anything, trying to enjoy in so many varieties of species. And never finding satisfaction, never finding happiness. And that's why we keep wandering, 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 wandering. If in the middle of all that wandering, we can somehow, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, get that seed of bhakti planted in the heart, then we become freed up from all this wandering. Brahmanda brahmite kono bhagavan jeev, guru krishna prasade pai bhakti lata bij. You see? By the mercy of the spiritual master, you get that seed of Krishna bhakti planted in the heart. So, what you do with that seed will make you or it will break you. If one takes advantage of that seed by watering it regularly, you see, by hearing and chanting, being attentive in the class, staying awake in the class. If one waters that seed by being very attentive and also avoids the aparad, you see, these are called aparads. They are compared to weeds. Of course, the first of them is the big one that's called hati mata, mad elephant. One has to keep the weeds out of the garden. And at the same time, one has to build a very, very strong fence because these mad elephants come charging through. And if your little creeper is sitting there without any protection, then what's going to happen? This has been the downfall of many of our ISKCON devotees. They didn't build a solid fence around their creeper to protect themselves from Vaishnava Parab. They allow themselves to become carried away by Vaishnava Parad. And that destroyed them, at least for the time being. There's always a chance for revival. Because whatever service we've done is our eternal asset that can never be taken away. But it can be put into state of suspension for a very long time. If one becomes guilty of Vaishnava Parad. So we have to build a very, very strong wall around our devotional creeper that we will never become blasphemous or critical of devotees. That doesn't mean we can't see a discrepancy, a genuine discrepancy. That's all right. Prabhupada wants us to be intelligent and see what the standard is and know what is the standard. It's not that I have to accept substandard behavior as being standard behavior as respect for a devotee. No, it's not required. But I have to see the good in that devotee also. Srila Prabhupada explains that everyone has a combination of good and bad qualities. But a devotee is that person who sees the good. You see, he's the bumblebee who's going for the honey. And the non-devotee, he's the one who's looking for he's like a fly looking for the sower. So if we actually want to be in the category, listed in the category of devotees, then we have to see the good quality. Even in a rogue or a rascal. You see, when Chanakya Pandit says, take gold even from a filthy place. One of the gurus mentioned in the Bhagavatam, you know, one of the gurus mentioned the dog. One can take the dog as his guru. Why? Because he's so faithful to the master. We may not like a particular devotee's behavior, but we should see how faithful he is to the master. So in this way, we should always find the good in others. This will protect us from the hati mata, mad elephant offense, and we have to weed out the other nine aparads, actually, including the inattention. So in that sense, there is 10. The big one, and then 10 more when you add the inattentive one. So we have to guard against these weeds very carefully. Whenever the weeds come in, we have to uproot them and throw them out of the garden. In this way, the devotional creeper will grow and it will thrive. It will actually penetrate the coverings of the universe. It will travel through the spiritual sky all the way to Goloka Vrindavan. And there, that creeper will entwine itself around the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and the full-blown pearl, the full-blown fruit of love of God will become manifest. But it all begins when we receive that seed of bhakti from the spiritual master. Bona fide guru will plant that seed of bhakti, how? Through sound vibration. We open our ears to hear the words of Sri Guru, then that seed of bhakti enters the heart. And if we continue to water that seed by hearing from Guru, by hearing from Vaishnavas, by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, then that seed will simply become, it'll grow and grow as that creeper and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And those powerful, you know how thick the coverings are of this material universe? It's incomprehensible. Every layer is 10 times thicker than the previous one. Those 7 layers. The first layer is 10 times thicker than the inside of the universe, which is billions of miles. It's incomprehensible. If you actually did a diagram of the universe with its coverings, the open portion in the middle would be just like a little pinhead in the middle of this huge, you understand? This huge, expansive globe. The coverings are so thick. So there's no way you can ever get out of it mechanically. You see, it's not possible to mechanically get through the coverings of the universe. Anyone who thinks that they can go, you know, they can get through mechanically, they're in for a surprise. Not possible. We'll never break through it mechanically. Not possible. The only way to do it is to become Krishna conscious. If you become Krishna conscious, you can penetrate the coverings of the universe. You can easily pass through that thick shell and go back to your original position in the spiritual world. How can we think that we can mechanically go to the kingdom of God and we can't even successfully make it to the moon? Even if we went there, which is debatable, even the materialists are debating whether we really went there or not. Even if we went to the moon, could we settle there? Could we stay there? Is it practical to stay there? According to their reports, you know, it was with huge expense. They went there with all kinds of artificial arrangements. Even if they went there, they couldn't stay there. To actually enter the moon, one has to get a visa. If you try to enter without a visa, you might make it to the airport, but you can't clear customs. You see, to actually clear customs and actually enter into the atmosphere requires a visa. So according to this description here, there are people there drinking a celestial beverage called Soma Rasa, which is millions of times more wonderful than any liquor you could have on this planet. That Soma Rasa gives you a longer lifespan. Here, liquor will cut your life short. It'll rot your liver. You know, like the more vodka you drink, you know, messes you up. So the Soma Rasa actually makes you more healthy, makes you more intelligent. It's just the opposite with our intoxication here. Unhealthy and foolish brain. You become more beautiful, more longevity. It just enhances everything. You enjoy like anything. So They didn't. You can understand they didn't really enter the atmosphere of the moon. If they had, they could have tried some soma rasa. The astronauts could have tried out some soma rasa. You see? So even if they did enter the moon, they weren't able to clear customs. You see? And actually enter the real atmosphere of the moon. Or the people are, you know, these beautiful heavenly bodies and beautiful palaces made of jewels. They never saw them. It's like someone might enter a country, you know, but not have the proper paperwork, and they just put them under arrest at the airport and deport them the next day. It happened one time a devotee went to Mexico and didn't have the proper paperwork. So the authorities put the devotee under arrest and then sent that devotee back to America on the next plane. Even though the devotee entered Mexico, the devotee couldn't really enter Mexico to actually see the real Mexico. They were just held in detention at the airport. So in the same way, even if we went to the moon, physically got to the moon planet somehow or other, we couldn't actually enter into the real civilization of the moon because we didn't have the visa. The visa means you have to be a devotee of the demigod of the moon and qualify yourself to actually get a moon body in your next birth. Then you can enter the moon. Get a moon body, a moon being body in your next lifetime. So anyway, it's pretty clear that we have to become Krishna conscious. That's really the bottom line here. Again and again and again, it all boils down to the same old wonderful fact. We really have nothing else to do except to become a pure devotee of Krishna. Anything else is shrama eva hi kevalam, simply a useless, foolish, childish waste of time. So we can ask now if there's any questions.
I have a question here. Earlier you were talking about building a fence to protect against the wandering mad elephant of Hanumata.
Yes. Yes.
What do we make this fence out of?
It is called... That fence is described by Srila Narottam Das Thakur. Anande bolo hari baja vrindavan Shri Guru Vaishnava pade majai aman. You see? He is saying, ecstatically chant Hare Krishna mantra, worship the holy Vrindavan, and you should always worship the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnava. So, that is the key. You must always worship the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnavas. And that worship will be your strong fence that will keep the mad elephant from getting in. Always look for something to appreciate about every single devotee. Even if they have many bad qualities, they may be a neophyte with many bad qualities, but try to see what is the good quality of that devotee and appreciate that good quality very sincerely and genuinely. Always appreciate the good qualities of that devotee. In that way, even if you're in a position where you have to correct them, which is difficult, it's difficult to be a leader in our Krishna consciousness movement. Because actually we're simply meant to worship the Vaishnavas. So to correct a Vaishnava is a very difficult thing. To be a spiritual master is difficult. To be a leader is a difficult thing because you're supposed to worship the devotees only. But that if one has to correct, then that has to be done in a mood of worship, of service, of wanting to help this person, not out of some egotism, but out of a genuine desire to help this person move forward in their spiritual life. So anyway, that's the real point. One has to always admire and appreciate the good qualities of the devotees. The more that we do that, that will actually be an encouragement for them to increase their good qualities even more. And more and more and more and more. Any further questions?
There was, within the ISKCON Society, there's a devotee called Jayananda in San Francisco who quit and left his body, and Prabhupada very much appreciated him. And it is said by people that knew him that sometimes he would walk away under two circumstances. Sometimes he would be in a group of people that started criticizing other devotees, and he would walk away. And sometimes people would start glorifying him, and he would walk away.
That's right. He had a very strong fence. That is a good example. And he always gave all encouragement and glorification of other devotees. He always saw the good in others, you see. He practiced what I was saying. He was always appreciating the devotees, all the devotees very much. So, yes, he's a good example. If you follow in the footsteps of Jayananda, you'll have a very strong wall around your creature to protect it from Vaishnava Param. That's about it.
In the verse, it's talking about don't waste your time wandering from the topmost planet to the lowest planet.
Yes.
But sometimes it's recommended to go and visit holy places. And sometimes we see that great personalities, like your good self, you're wandering all over the place too.
Yeah, but we're not wandering for some sense gratification. We are wandering on the order of our spiritual master to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. That is the difference. Wandering in itself is neither good nor bad, just like a surgeon's scalpel is neither good nor bad. It can be used for a good purpose of removing cancer. It can be used for a bad purpose of murdering somebody by cutting their throat. So wandering in itself is neither good nor bad. But if one is wandering on the order of the spiritual master to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, then that is very good. That wandering liberates. Actually, every step of one's wandering, one becomes more and more purified. That wandering itself is bhakti. Just like it is also stated that by traveling to the temple, that the act of traveling is also to the temple is also devotional service. It's like chanting Hare Krishna's devotional service. If you're traveling on a pilgrimage to visit to go to Rath Yatra festival, every little thing you're doing, turning the ignition on the car key to start the car, that's bhakti. Because you're doing it to get to see Jagannath. You see, every little thing you're doing is bhakti. Prabhupada encouraged us to come to the Mayapur festival every year in India. One devotee objected that Prabhupada is so expensive. So Prabhupada said, food is also expensive, so you will not eat. So whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness, we do that. Of course, it's also sometimes said it's not necessary to go to the places of pilgrimage, because if you make your own place of residence a place of pilgrimage, then you're already in a place of pilgrimage. If you're living in a holy place, what need is there to go anywhere else? If Vrindavan is here, if you bring Vrindavan here to Niles, Michigan, what need you have to go anywhere else? You're already living in Vrindavan. So the most important thing is to make your own place of residence, Vrindavan.
Narad Muni is talking about, one should not wander, but he is wandering a lot, up and down.
He's not saying not to wander here. He's just saying you should endeavor for that which is not obtainable by wandering. Is it? That's what he's saying. That which is not obtainable by wandering this material, you know, existence is Krishna consciousness.
That means wandering in a different species or what?
Yes. Why not? This wandering can be understood to mean there's all different species also. Yes.
Can you say that it was his dharma to wander, like?
Dharma?
Yeah, like.
Or karma?
Not karma, dharma. Like
dharma.
Like his nature,
or
his
yes.
duty.
That is one dharma given by the spiritual master. And there's one place where Prabhupada actually states that after one's initiated, it's one's duty to travel and preach all over the world after initiation. He doesn't say you have to be a sannyasi. He says, after one is initiated, one should travel and preach all over the world. I was enlivened to find that quote. Someone would say, why are you traveling? You have a wife, you know, sannyasi. That's the dharma of the sannyasis, but actually Prabhupada is the dharma of initiated devotee. Travel and preach all over the world. Questions more?
Somebody who has not yet received a spiritual master, perhaps it would be good to wander in order to increase his chances of coming across a bona fide.
That would be a bona fide reason for traveling. Let me travel throughout ISKCON world and hear there's so many nice gurus, preaching, representing Prabhupada so nicely. Let me go and meet. This is a very common question I'm asked. How do you choose your guru? I've been asked that again and again and again. How do you choose your spiritual master? So we tell them it's simple. You meet and hear as many gurus as possible, and then whichever one inspires you the most, become his disciple. Very simple formula. Whichever guru inspires you the most. Of course, if when you find someone. It's not that you have to keep searching forever. If you find someone that you really feel, this person is my spiritual master, this person loves me, he cares about me, he's pure, he's not engaged in sinful activities, and I'm very inspired, I'd like to be his disciple, then go ahead. Not that you have to go on wandering. It's like you're hungry, you know, and you say, let me pick out a good restaurant. Keep driving all over New York City, checking out all the different restaurants, and you end up starving to death because you didn't have time to visit every one of them to choose which one you were going to eat at. So don't go on wandering too long.
Could it be said that Krishna will bring the spiritual master?
Yes, Prabhupada actually says that. He said, when one is actually sincere, then Krishna, the guru, will come to you when you're ready. Guru will come to you. So that's the other side of it.
But then are we clear enough?
Hmm?
But then if we are always finding the faults, maybe...
If someone's finding fault, they're not ready for a spiritual master.
Would they be able to recognize my point?
If someone is actually humble, then they will be able to recognize this is my spiritual master.
Like,
but if someone is very proudly thinking that I'm more qualified than any spiritual master, I'm the spiritual master, they will never recognize.
How do you explain, I didn't see my Guru Maharaj before I choose him. I heard about him. Some devotees
are
talking about him.
That's also bona fide. That's what Princess Rukmini did. She never saw Krishna. But just by hearing, she understood, this is my husband. So actually, because Guru is not limited to his physical body, you see, just by, he's actually present in the instructions that he gives also. So Yeah, it's possible. Just by hearing about, you can understand this person will be my guru.
I felt like my heart was pumping.
When yes.
I heard, my heart started pumping. And I go to the devotee and I said, oh, you know, who are you talking to about? I even didn't understand who he was talking, but he described some qualities or something, and I start to feel like anxious. Then I ask him, bring me picture. And when he brought me picture, when I looked, I said, oh, I just knew.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, an interesting point is this. This is an interesting point for discussion, but when you go back to Godhead, there's no past, present, or future at that time. This whole past, present, and future thing is what's going on in the material existence. So the question would be this. When you go back to the spiritual world, your guru is there, you are there, your disciple, he's your master. And since there's no past, present, and future, it means he was always your guru. It's an interesting point for discussion. So does that mean that actually the person, does that mean that actually you already have your guru, it's just a matter of finding him again? That's an interesting point for discussion. Would that mean that actually your spiritual master is already there? You have the relationship, it's just a matter of reviving it? It's an interesting question.
But how, if I had thousands of lives in this material world, when I met him, or how?
Will I?
Well, she's saying that, well, actually I'm not sure, you didn't finish.
You know, if we think, you know, we here in material world, for thousand lives.
Right.
Right? So, and I think, in, you know, when I met my guru, and this, if I remember, or if I, you know, feel like he's my guru.
So what's the question? I don't understand.
Question is, when it's possible, I met him. Just, I remember him from spiritual world, when I was there, or...
Yeah, this is a point for discussion. Prabhupada never actually stated that directly. I just think it's an interesting topic of discussion because in the spiritual world, there's no past, present, or future. This was described by Ravina Sarup in his article about, I forget the title, but you enter into a timelessness. So does I'm raising the question. I'm just raising the question. Does that mean that then that I the spiritual master was always my spiritual master, and I just forgot.
He says that Krishna is the original spiritual master. The personalities can be different.
Well, that's a whole other. That's a different question. Anyway, yeah, I'm not. There's no evidence directly stated by Prabhupada to this effect, but it's just that's an interesting question that. Since we do achieve a pure timeless state in the spiritual existence with no past, present, and future, would that mean that the guru, we already have our guru, it's just a matter of finding him again?
Can it be said that in the spiritual world, among societies of the gopis or the gopas, there's all kinds of guru-disciple relationships within Krishna's friends and Krishna's gopis, Krishna's elder gopis and gopas, where they're taking instruction and direction one from one another in serving Krishna?
Yes, there's certainly a hierarchy of trainers and trainees, you know, and subordinates in the spiritual world. There's the gopis, you know, the chief gopis and those who are assisting the chief gopis. Chief gopas and those who are assisting the chief gopas. There's the chief cows and those who are assisting. There's other cows that are subordinate to the chief cows. There's all kinds of hierarchies in the spiritual world. Even amongst the butterflies, there must also be hierarchies. And those that are most close to Krishna and those who help those who are close to Krishna. And those who help those who help those, you know.
A manjari to the butterfly.
A manjari
butterfly.
That I don't know. We'll find out. But once you make, the real bottom line is once you decide that this person will be my spiritual master, then you have to have unflinching dedication to that spiritual master. Complete, total dedication. That's a fact. Of course, if the spiritual master turns out that he's not able to function properly in that position, that's another matter.
But is it means if my spiritual master could not function,
he gives up being a spiritual master.
Yeah, but how I feel, of course, now he's okay, but you know, I feel like it's still my duty to support him or.
Even in the case, actually, Prabhupada mentioned, there's something that Prabhupada describes in the fourth canto, the portion about Dhruva Maharaj. It gives an interesting angle of vision on this aspect, that Prabhupada says that the disciple can actually carry his guru back to Godhead. Let's say someone's initiated by someone, and that initiator really, really helped and inspired that disciple. But that initiator then had some difficulties. So the disciple can actually think of saving his own, you know, reciprocating the mercy he got from his own spiritual master. Prabhupada said, sometimes I think that in my old age I'm very crippled, and one of my disciples can take me back to Godhead. So it's an interesting point that you don't usually hear in Prabhupada's teachings, but that one place Prabhupada mentions like that. In our society, we have a case where some spiritual masters were a great inspiration for so many, 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 many disciples. Just like there was a very leading preacher in Europe, for example, who inspired people all over Europe. And then he fell into difficulty. And he gave up his service. He disassociated from our society and everything. So, and there are people who are still very attached to him in Eastern Europe. So, what should they think? What should they feel that some of were initiated by him? So, they can feel an indebtedness to him and want to reciprocate that love and that mercy they got from him by at least praying for his deliverance from his difficulty as a reciprocation. You saved me when I was down and out. Now let me be your well-wisher when you're down and out. That's also there.
Exactly.
That's love.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I was very attached to him too, and when it happened, I was like sorry, or I was like, oh, you know, like I don't know how to explain, like hold him and just help him to.
Yeah, that mood of wanting to help him and see that he is. Even if one is not physically in a proximity to do that, just by meditation, one can be praying for his welfare, his benefit, his deliverance.
Because it's like sick person, you know, when he was okay, when he inspired all of us, you know, they're taking, right?
Taking his mercy, right.
And when he got sick, you know, it's really sickness,
right.
And, you know, in a sense. Right. Then if we like give up and say, okay, I don't want you anymore because you're sick.
Right.
No, I don't feel it's right.
Right, that's correct. One who was the recipient of so much inspiration from another person, if that person is now in difficulty, then one should think, how can that person be helped out of their difficulty? So Prabhupada gives the indication that this can be an attitude of a disciple. To help their spiritual master in that way. Of course, normally it's the other way around, but normally the spiritual master is not going to. The standard situation of a spiritual master is he'll be very strong and he won't fall down. The disciples can always be there, taking his shelter of him and taking his blessings, inspiration, guidance. That is the standard. But sometimes there may be situations where that the standard doesn't always happen. That's there sometimes in the scripture. Shukracharya is an example. The spiritual master of Bali Maharaj. Any other questions?
Could it mean if a guru fell down, could it mean that Krishna show us that Maya is very strong and we have to be careful?
That is one lesson that can be derived.
Yeah, it's like lesson there that...
That is one lesson that can be derived.
It can happen to us too.
Yeah,
I mean, we have to
that's right.
And say.
That is one lesson. Of course, the question would be, was that person really a guru? In the real sense. And someone is actually a spiritual master. Of course.
That's right. I just feel sometimes.
If he was really a guru in the true sense of the word, could he have ever fallen down? That's another question.
In that sense, if you want to understand the eternal relationship of the spiritual master, how can it be seen that he has been the eternal spiritual master?
Yeah, that's right. So it's an interesting field of study. Let's put it that way. I mean, these things may not be very clear to us at this time. All the subtleties of Guru Tattva. But as we progress and we become purified and more realized in Krishna consciousness, then gradually all these things will be clear. Prabhupada personally told me, because I used to write him and ask him a lot of questions. About this point and that point.
Yes, I feel like the understanding, correct understanding, could be like this. I'm not saying that it's correct. But Krishna is the original spiritual master, and he manifests the different personality as a different personality as the spiritual master, and that way he is the eternal spiritual master. Krishna. Because he says he's a Chaitya Guru, and when one is sincere, he manifests as a spiritual master.
Yeah, the fully empowered Vaishnava Acharya is called Shakta Vaishavata. Yeah. He is a jiva, but he is actually empowered with the Shakti of Krishna. He is able to impart the mercy of Krishna. He has the power to give the mercy of Krishna to his students, disciples. But the point I was making was that, because sometimes there's different aspects of our philosophy where there's a lot of, you know, we still don't know. A lot of questions we don't really know the answers for. So what to do about those aspects? Well, we really can't definitively say this is exactly how it is. Prabhupada told me, he said, if you will simply engage with full sincerity of attitude, always be engaged in Krishna's service, then he said that Krishna will personally come to you and he answered all your questions. So if one is eager to know all the answers to these subtle questions, detailed answers, don't feel that it's hopeless to know the answers. Just try to be fully absorbed in devotional service with full sincerity of attitude 24 hours a day. And then, as Prabhupada personally told me in one letter, then actually Lord Sri Krishna will personally come to you and he will answer all your questions. He can come right here in Niles.
He just did.
But I mean, to the point where he actually can talk to you and give you the answers.
But how we recognize, you know, sometimes...
Oh, believe me, when you by his mercy, you'll understand this is the real thing. If you come to the point where Krishna will personally come and answer your questions, you'll know you'll know it's Krishna. He will reveal it to you. You'll know for sure what's going on. You won't be an illusion. You'll know.
Well, sometimes devotees say, oh, you know, I have vision of Krishna.
Well,
Krishna came in a dream, and another devotee will say, oh, it's speculation.
Yeah, well, an easy way to see whether their vision is bona fide or not is compare it with the books. That's all you got to do. It's very simple.
Well, I mean, you know, like, you know, Mataji laughing, but, you know, I don't really share with some visions, whatever. I remember in Chicago Temple when I was, after Mangala Arati, I was chanting, walking in temple room, and I was very, Damodar was my, you know, Krishna who I worship and had relationship. And I, you know, in my mind or I don't know how, you know, Krishna and Balaram, they want Krishna hold my hand. But
in a dream?
Huh?
This is a dream?
No, it's like I'm chanting, I chant japa and I feel it or I don't know. Krishna hold my hand, but Balaram won't hold my hand.
Well, things can be like just a dream state, where, because in the subconscious, so many images are stored and they come up and they combine in different forms. It could be a mental image that we conjured up from, you know, seeing so many pictures of Krishna. But if you actually come to the point where Krishna reveals himself in full to you, that's another matter, where he answers all of your questions, as Prabhupada said. That's another thing.
Our life won't be the same.
Well, I just think, you know, what's this that, you know, and because I'm good with children, I'll say, hey, don't fight, you can hold my finger from japa. I said, okay, you can hold the finger, Balaram, you know, because they like children fight. Oh, I want my mom hold my hands. But two of them, and my hand is busy with, I just think, I don't say it's real, but what this? And I felt so happy, I felt like, in ecstasy.
A good way of understanding it is given in the Bhagavatam. What is that verse? Bhakti pareshanu varovaraktir anyatra chayshatra ka eka kalaha prapadyamanasya yatasnadashu chushchipushi sharapau go nagasam. That devotion, direct experience of the Lord, and detachment from all material things occurs simultaneously for one who is engaged in devotional service. So, that is one of the symptoms of someone is actually genuinely experiencing having Krishna's darshan. One symptom is they'll have absolutely no material desire. Such a viraktir, they become completely detached from all forms of material sense gratification. Subtle and gross.
So
that's one symptom.
This, but I think it may be Krishna giving some credit, little encouragement.
That's also there.
You know, like, well, I'm
Krishna can give a sneak preview sometime. Possible. Even that woman in the forest, the Prabhupada gives the example. She wasn't a pure devotee, and she got a darshan of Krishna. But she didn't use it properly. Krishna actually came. She was carrying some sticks. Prabhupada gives the example. She was carrying some sticks on her shoulder, bundled sticks. And it got so heavy, she just, you know, it fell off her shoulder. She went, Krishna, Krishna. So Krishna came and said, yes. He said, can you help me put the sticks back on my shoulder? Sometimes even a materialist can have a darshan of Krishna. There's another story given by Prabhupada. There was one thief. He chanced upon a Bhagavad discourse. And the Bhagavad preacher was telling how in the Vrindavan forest there is this boy named Krishna, a little boy, and he is loaded with valuable jewels. So the thief became very enlightened. Oh, in Vrindavan forest there's a little boy He wanders around and he's loaded with valuable jewels. Ah, I will go there and I will steal his jewels. So he walked all across India meditating. Oh, I will go to Vrindavan. I will steal the jewels from that little boy Krishna. He got to Vrindavan and he was wandering for days throughout the, you know, huge Braj Mandal area. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?
By wandering, he forgot about his eating and sleeping also.
He was so absorbed. Where is, I will find that Krishna, I will take the jewels. Finally, that day came. Krishna, he actually saw Krishna. And he said, Krishna, you have so many nice jewels. Can you give me some? He's trying to like beg some jewels off a little kid. He tried to sweet talk a little boy and parting with some of the goods, you know. Instead of just grabbing him, he's trying to sweet talk him, you know. And then Krishna played the role of the, you know, the son of Yashoda, and he said, oh, no, no, my mother will be, she will chastise me. I can't give any jewels. Mother will scold me very much. I cannot give. This way, Krishna. But again, he asked, and actually, he became purified by that association. He became a pure devotee on the spot. Then Krishna said, all right, you can take. So, somehow or other, one can get the darshan of Krishna. Akama sarvakama va moksha dhamma dharma vana. What is that?
Moksha kama udhara.
Moksha kama udhara. If one is, even if has all material desires, if somehow or other you can become Krishna conscious. But one who actually has the true darshan of Krishna, they will become purified. They will become pure, completely purified. The general, that woman, she didn't take advantage of Krishna. But someone who's actually been enlightened by Krishna with divine knowledge and instructions and gotten questions answered, that person will become completely purified. They won't have material desires anymore. They'll just be like Narada Muni who got that brief. They'll just be dying to have that. Their whole life will be dedicated to somehow can I see Krishna again. They won't live for anything else. They'll have no other desire except to see Krishna again. They won't, nothing else will even matter to them anymore. Just when could I see him again? When could I see him again? That's the genuine darshan. Otherwise, you know, so we've seen so many photographs. And it's like in a dream, you know, you see a gold mountain. You've seen mountains, you've seen gold. In the dream, you see a gold mountain. So we can imagine so many things. Of course, even dreaming about Krishna at our level, that's very encouraging. Wow, at least I'm dreaming about Krishna. Not dreaming about sex life. It's in good. So any Krishna consciousness, even if it's just, you know, concocted images in our brain, it's also good. Because it's Krishna. Any thought of Krishna is very good.
In the beginning, when I, like 1-2 years, I was like neophyte devotee, and I had in Russia, I had very, very comfortable bed, like very soft. And when I lay down, you know, Krishna, Damodar, was crawl to my bed and lay with me. And all night, I was sleeping. I muttered, I know you're laughing, I'm sharing that really happened.
No,
and
it
all
happened.
Night,
it
I
happened.
Was asleep, and I was like consciously, oh, you know, I don't want to hurt him. I was like, I could not move because I know his little baby sleeping with me. I could not hurt him. So I was like light sleep all night. And I just, I knew he's right there. I know it's not like that real, you know, darshan, but somehow in my mind.
It's a strong mental image.
It's a mental image.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know.
Well, it's nice you're thinking of Krishna.
You know, but how it's happened? I didn't meditate. I didn't say Krishna come, you know, it just somehow it's happened.
It's not easy to answer these questions. How do you get these strong mental images that are like very, very powerful mental images?
Maybe Krishna is telling you that you should do it like that with Krishna. Give up all the attachments
take him as a baby. You know, and sometimes devotees, they're very, you know, they say, oi, what are you talking about? You're not pure devotee that Krishna come to you. I know that. But my question is, how it's happened?
It could be something from a previous lifetime. You know? You have so many experiences from previous lifetimes that are still stored in your subconscious. Something coming up from a previous lifetime.
Maybe she should be serving Krishna like that, only very nicely taking good care of him and all that. If Krishna is coming in her dream, then.
Yeah, it's hard to know. That's why we really, you know, we can easily be misguided by what we feel are divine instructions, etc. That's why the principle of guru and sadhus is very important in scripture. Because those who are actually realized in the highest degree, they act completely in terms of the scripture. They don't deviate from scripture. Because otherwise we may, you know, it's very important. Prabhupada wanted to see, he trained us to follow the principles of sadhana bhakti very strictly.
The thing is that I'm not laughing at you, Mataji. I just want to say, when I, like Prema Bhakti Prabhu says, you know, these songs by Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur, they are thinking still themselves, Vishayi, instead of thinking and talking about their dreams, but they come, Krishna, you came. We feel ourselves so humble that way when we become pure devotees. That instead of talking about our dreams, which can be a mental concoction, I'm not saying that it is your, we can be saying, but we can see from the acharyas how they feel more and more and more lower than the blade of grass. It's so humble. Vishayi charya, sabhe shuddha habe man, that I can chant my name, holy name, very purely.
This
before I become that pure.
No.
Stages there. Maybe images help me to get to this stage. You know.
Yeah. So we cannot
just become humble and pure right away.
Yes.
One point in this connection is that Prabhupada gives the example of the Goswami. They have that. There's a very nice prayer. This is how the Goswamis would meditate when they were Vrindavan. Hey Radhe, Vrajadevi ke chalalite he nanda sunukutaha. Shri Govardhana Kalpa Padapa Kale Kalindi Vane Kutaha. Even though they were getting the darshan of Krishna, they weren't saying, I saw this. Their mood was, Hey Rad, Hey Vrajadevi K, oh Radharani, Queen of Vrindavan, where are you? Hey Nanda Sunara, oh son of Maharaj Nanda, where are you? They preferred that mood of Vipralamba, being separated. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? They preferred to be in that mood of being separated, not, oh, I saw Krishna in this. Even though they were seeing, they didn't want to relish that mood. They found the real ecstasy was, when will I see? When will I see? When will I see? I'm dying in the separation. When will I see? When will I see? When will I see? So they keep themselves focused in that mood.
So if we have this speculation, vision, whatever, we shouldn't even talk about.
No need to focus on it, because the real thing is we should focus on when will that day come when I'll be able to see Krishna. That should be the mood. Always feeling, now I'm not seeing him, when will I see him? Whatever was there, you can say, well, that's a nice encouragement. But the real thing is that when will I see Krishna? When will I see him? That's the real thing.
That we should always think we are here and we are not. We should not discourage ourselves for that, but we should see the moods of all the acharyas, how they are doing, and that way we develop our love for Krishna more. If I think that, oh, I have seen Krishna, then my pride will also come. Oh, I have had this dream, and my pride will come, and I will never be able to really have the vision of Krishna.
Well, you know,
let's take that.
I didn't feel proud. I was nearby. It was strange for me. It was like, oh, you know, I didn't even know what it's, you know, it just happened. It's happened, you know. And when I start to share with somebody, they, you know, discourage really what it sound that. Discouraged, like
if you feel like that way, then you must not even talk about it.
Well, okay, then I won't talk.
Just get it. Feel good about yourself.
It's what I say, you know. I understand. I should only share with my husband.
Well, if she has a question in her mind,
I had to say this. Can I speak something?
I was speaking and you interrupted me.
I had a clearance from my heart because I laughed and she said, Mataji is laughing. I wasn't laughing for that reason that you had the vision. But
no, I just know how devotees react. Devotees say, I only heard one sannyas. He just simply said, it can happen.
Yeah, it can happen.
And, you know, I don't feel like I'm some pure devotee. Krishna appeared to me. I just want to know what stage, what this, how it's happened, it's mental or...
There's, we have to watch out for what's called sahaja mentality. Well, we take the process in a more cheaply than it actually is. That's the danger. It's called the danger of sahajaism. Of thinking, yes, I had the darshan, I had this rasa. These are like there was one brahmachari in Mayapur. Devotees came, he's in a long building in Mayapur. Devotees came by his room and he was going, whoo, 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 strutting around there. He said, Prabhu, what's going on? He said, I'm practicing my rasa. One Babaji and Radhakund told me I'm a peacock in Krishna's pastime, so now I'm training myself. So, this is called Sahajaism. If you're thinking, oh yes, now I know that I'm actually in the rasa of the mother, I'm Krishna's mother, This can be an impediment for your actually achieving pure bhakti. So one has to be careful for sahaja tendency. The thinking that you're on a higher level than you really are. It's a very dangerous thing for your progress. Now one point I did want to make moments ago was that if one can submissively inquire, if one has had some experience or vision, what they feel is a vision, and one is confused about how to relate to that, then it is not improper to approach a senior devotee and submissively ask for guidance on how should I understand this. There's no harm in doing that. If one is confused about any aspect of one's devotional progress, then one has a duty actually to inquire from senior devotees to understand how to relate with this. That's a fact. So it's not improper for her to bring this out to get some clarification. Not at all improper. But the real clarification is, as I am saying, that one has to watch out for the sahaja tendency to imagine that I've realized who I am. Because of this thing or that thing. I had some dream. No, this is on the level of the mind. We haven't fully gotten free of the contamination of the mind yet. The mind can conjure up so many things. So we have that mind has to be completely purified, and even the most subtle tinges of the material nature to actually revive that pure Krishna bhakti. Should never take things cheaply. Any other questions?
Earlier we were talking about the Hatimata and the fence.
About, yes, that's right.
And then this question is about in the garden of our devotion, along with the watering of the Bhakti Lata, is the watering of the weeds also. So how do we recognize the weeds from the actual plant? And how do we pull out the weeds?
Yes, that's very important. We have to know the difference. This is the advantage of the association of senior devotees, guru, sadhus, those who have actually learned how to distinguish between these things. They can teach us. That's why advanced association is so important. Understand the difference between a weed and what's a weed and what's a creeper.
So the answer is by associating with advanced devotees, yeah, teaches.
And by one's own sincerity also. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddha yogam tam yena mama piyantite. To those who were constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding to know. You see, how they can come to me. So coming to Krishna means you have to know the difference between spirit and matter. You have to know the difference. And by sincere practice, that knowledge becomes more and more realized. So therefore, one should follow the standard items of Krishna bhakti, sadhana bhakti, on a regular daily basis. And then it becomes more and more clear. Question? Time? All right, we'll wrap it up here. Is there any last question? Okay.
I was reading Bhaktaloka by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur last night a little bit, and he was talking about...
It's called Bhaktaloka?
Bhaktaloka.
Oh, Bhaktaloka.
Yeah, it's his different essays that he wrote on each one of the six favorable and six unfavorable qualities of devotional service. And I was reading in the Niyamadraha,
yeah,
of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Upadeshamrita. It's referring to the rules and regulations, and he's talking about the different levels a person may be on. There's different rules and regulations that he needs to follow. Someone in the Karmakanda level, or the Jnanakanda, or in Bhakti. And one of the things that I'm asking you about is that one of the qualities or the rules and regulations for Bhakti that he mentioned, one of the first ones was to be indifferent. And one should be indifferent.
Indifferent to what?
You just said indifferent.
That means to be equipoise.
Like for honor, dishonor, heat, yeah, cold, you're indifferent,
right,
to it.
That's right. It means to be equipoise. See everything equally. That's right. You have to see how Krishna's mercy is manifesting in every single way. It's all Krishna's mercy, except for your own mistakes. Everything else is Krishna's mercy. Your mistakes are when you deviate from, when you're not remembering Krishna, that's not Krishna's mercy. But everything that's happening to you, that's all Krishna's mercy. To help you come closer to Krishna. Okay. Very good. So we thank you all very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you.